Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Man, how the time flies, isn't that right? 888-914-9149 is the number. I've got room for you. Angelica in San Jose, I jumped the gun, but here we are for real this time. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to say I really am having a good time listening to your show. My friend Jeffrey Jimenez out in Ione, California, put me on to this, and it's been awesome, a blessing. So
wonderful.
Thank you.
And thank you.
My question is, I have a teenage son. He's a freshman in high school, and he's going to be starting confirmation. He's not thrilled about it. He's not thrilled about the faith. You know, even though we go to mass, he's like fighting me along the way. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what, son, I'm going to pray for you that you'll find a cute girl in confirmation class. I was like, would that even be okay? Because I know that, you know, people have come to faith and they found God for the wrong reasons initially, but God right. works in mysterious ways.
Yeah. So you're wondering what to tell him?
Well, I was just wondering, like, first, would that be okay if I actually did pray, hey, there's a cute girl in class, so he could be motivated to go? But, you know,
I
or if you have a word of advice of what I could tell him, that would be good, too.
Yeah, well, let's start there. So my advice would be that the ideal is for these young people to receive the sacrament of confirmation because they believe it. They believe in Jesus. They believe in the gospel, and they want to draw closer to Jesus, and they take this seriously. So that's the ideal. Now, it doesn't mean that that necessarily is the case most of the time. Probably isn't. So we're dealing with people as they are, not as we would like them to be. So if he's not motivated to be confirmed, if he doesn't believe it, I think this is where having a conversation with your son is really important. And what I mean is a conversation about, what do you think about Jesus? Do you believe in Jesus? Do you believe he is God? Do you believe he is your Savior? Because honestly, and this is true of all the sacraments and everything else for that matter, but if somebody doesn't believe in Jesus Christ and who he is and what he's doing and what he did for us, then none of the rest of it will make any sense at all. It's just like being in a club where you don't really understand all the rules, but you're in this club because you grew up in it and your mom and dad are in the club and most of the people you know are in the club and you kind of do some club stuff, but you don't even really know why you're in the club. And what's the point of it? After a while, you get to the point where I don't even know why I'm doing this. And unless you can connect with him or maybe help him connect at the heart level, at the level of his mind and his heart with who Jesus Christ is, then none of this is going to make any sense. And so, yeah, I'll bet there are some cute girls in that class, but that's not a reason to go. I mean, that's a hook for a 15-year-old or however old he is, but that's not the right hook. The right hook, and I'm not talking about boxing, the right hook is, does he believe in Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior? Does he want to know and love and serve Jesus? Does he want to be his follower? And if he does, then he'll be drawn to these things because they will have meaning for him. I would start there.
I'm sorry, something happened with my phone. But yeah, I agree. And he does believe. He's just more like into sports. And I just know that right now girls are a thing for him. Mm-hmm. So it's not that he's not a believer. He's just more, he'd rather do other things. Like, do we have to go to church today? But I mean, once we're there, he participates and he does love the Lord. It's just that teenager mentality where, you know, priorities are not on point right now.
Well, believe me, I can relate. Up to a point, I can relate. I was never quite like that. I never said to my parents, do we have to go to church? But I can understand, you know, how he's being tugged in different directions by, you know, the world. It's understandable. But at the same time, though, I don't know if I would be so quick to say that he loves the Lord. Does he really love the Lord? Does he really love the Lord? And the Lord said, you can look at this in Revelation 3, maybe share this with your son, look at verse 15 and forward. He's speaking to the church in Laodicea, and he says, I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. Would that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. And that's a nice way of saying vomit. I will vomit you out of my mouth. So this problem of lukewarmness is probably far more common, I think, anyway. It's much more common, I think, than people who actively dislike Jesus or actively dislike the faith. There are probably some of those people running around. But the vast majority, the squishy middle, would be the people who are just lukewarm. So, you know, they pay lip service, but they don't really, when you get right down to it, they don't really love the Lord. They might like him here and there. Yeah, Jesus is cool, said a few nice things, but, you know, I got other things I need to do. You know what I mean? I would see that, and personally, I do see that. And I don't want to talk about anybody in, you know, specifically, but in general, I have my radar up, and like with my extended family and things, when I see signs of that kind of thing, I try to take that very seriously and not be the, you know, the theology police or anything like that. That's not my role. But if I see that there's somebody who seems to be slipping into lukewarmness, I'm going to try, if I have a role to play in his or her life, I'm going to try to help that person. I'm going to try to get alongside that person and talk about, well, you know, what do you think about Jesus and what is your relationship with him? And in many cases, I think that conversation has never happened. Parents raise their kids in the church. They take them to Mass on Sunday. The kids get used to the routine. They go through the motions. They receive the sacraments. They get into high school. And certainly by the time they get to college, they just drop off the vine because they don't understand what it's all about anyway. It's just this club and everyone's part of it, and I don't really know why I'm part of it, and I'm kind of tired of it, so I'm not going to be in that club anymore. I think for a lot of people, that's what it really is. So we have to make that connection.
Yeah, that's actually what happened to me, and then I came back. Thanks be to God.
Indeed. Thanks be to God.
Yeah.
So
well,
you're in a perfect
position.
Thank
you so much for your insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Angelica, you're in a perfect position to share with your son because you could say to him, look, I have been where you are now, and let me tell you, it's a dead end. And let me tell you why. And let me tell you why I came back strongly to my practice of the faith and to Jesus. I think you've got just a huge amount of built-in credibility with him. And if you share with him your own personal journey, I wouldn't be surprised if it has an impact on him.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to try that. Thank you so much. I just told him, hey, I'm going to pray that there's a cute girl. And he was like, yeah, do that. You know, and then I thought, wow, is that even okay? So that's why I called in to ask. And like I said, I've been loving your show. Jeff sends his love, by the way. And, you know, I just want to say, good morning, Jeff. Keep your head up and, you know, keep pushing. And God will bless. And God bless all the listeners.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it. And we'll say a prayer for you, Angelica, that this conversation and the ones that follow will be effective and that your son will come back to a practice of his faith. Maybe you can get him the biography of St. Dominic Savio, who was a lad of about the same age. He died when he was about 15. He lived in Italy, and he died just shortly before the time of the Civil War. And his story is remarkable, his love for Jesus and the things that he understood about the faith. I took his name, Dominic, as my confirmation name in honor of him. And his story may be just what your son needs to read, or that of St. John Bosco, who was his mentor. And for what it's worth, I would encourage you, Angelica, to start asking St. Dominic Savio and St. John Bosco to intercede for your son. They're very powerful, and both of them, each in their own way, had a very important role to play in the lives of teenagers when they were alive. So pray to them as well. Let's go now to George. George listening in Los Angeles. Hi, George.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Quite the honor to talk to you.
I'm
in Los Angeles. I'm visiting from San Antonio. It's not really a question. It's more like a statement, a cry for help maybe, but I've been going through a rut. I've heard several callers call about they're going through ruts. A few years ago, my prayers were strong. My faith was strong. I was floating on air when I prayed, and it just felt fantastic. It felt like this could never go away. This is so fantastic. In fact, I'll babble on a little bit. So 2012, 2013, 2014, I was praying real hard, so much so that I got, at 42 years old, I went to nursing school. I all of a sudden, miraculously, went to nursing school, you know, because God gave me these talents. I needed to use them to the best of my ability. So my prayers were strong. Blessed Mother was there for me. So this is not like I don't believe in God anymore. It's just now my prayers, I'm still praying for my family. I'm still praying for the souls in purgatory, a handful of patients that I remember that I connected with. It just seems real like I'm phoning it in. I'm just going through the motions. It doesn't have the same fire. It doesn't have the same feel that I remember that I have had. But it's just a rut. It'll pass. Listening to the radio, listening to all the shows helps. Listening to you helps a lot. Your knowledge just blows me away. I'm here visiting my family because I needed to feel their love. Not that we're.
Are you looking for some advice?
Yes. How to continue on? How to make it through a rut?
Okay. I have some thoughts. And what you're experiencing is not unusual. Unusual for you, that's right, but it's not unusual. So I'll share with you some thoughts that I've learned. First thing I'll ask, and you don't have to answer the question, but ask yourself this question. So
correct.
Are you in the state of grace, and are you staying in the state of grace and receiving the sacraments, getting to Mass on Sunday, or do you find yourself in a rut because you've slipped back into, I don't know, let's just throw a dart, pornography, or into drunkenness, or into some other sin that you find yourself backsliding into? Or are you really kind of on the straight and narrow, you just don't feel any connection with God?
More of this, I'm on the straight and narrow. I still attending Mass, still praying, still. There is some back and forth with a little bit of things, but.
Yeah.
So,
but you're
more
going
straight
to the
narrow, just not. Correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm good. Yeah. The reason I. Okay, go ahead, George.
Yes.
The reason I ask that question is because the answer will be different depending upon which track you're on. So if that's the track you're on,
gotcha,
and you're making an honest effort, you're trusting in God for His grace to help you, but you're just not feeling it. You just don't get those, you know, the feels, as the young people say. Okay. This is actually, believe it or not, this tends to be a good sign. And this is what's known as aridity. Aridity, you know, when something is arid, it's very dry. So without putting words in your mouth, it sounds like what you're describing is you're going through a period of aridity, dryness, spiritually speaking. Now, it's great, and it really is exciting when you get the spiritual lollipops that God gives you. So when you were describing your journey from before, when you were deep in prayer and you had consolation, that's what you can think of as the spiritual lollipops. And there's a feeling of happiness and joy and all those things. But when God withdraws that, it's like having the training wheels taken off your bike. Now you have to ride the bike. With the training wheels on the bike, you're not really riding the bike. You know, the training wheels are keeping you upright. But when the training wheels come off, now you have to learn how to balance and ride the bike yourself. That's not a perfect analogy, but I think it's helpful. And in the spiritual life, what happens is as you progress in Christian maturity, and this is almost always one of the steps that those who progress in the Christian life go through, almost always, is God begins to withdraw the spiritual lollipops so that you don't have that rush. You don't have that warm and fuzzy. And the training wheels are off, and now you're riding the bike, and you realize, oh, there's more to this than just the good feels. I have to have faith in God, especially in those times when I don't feel His presence. I have to be faithful in prayer, especially in those times when I'm not getting the warm fuzzies when I pray. And this is part of your training in a Christian life, and it's the Lord who's training you, who's drawing you deeper. So I talked about this yesterday or the day before, but it sounds like the book that would benefit you right now would be the book called The Interior Castle by Saint Teresa of Avila. Get that book, because she herself went through this. Saint John of the Cross, one of her contemporaries and friends, he wrote a similar kind of book called The Dark Night of the Soul. But his book is all about spiritual aridity. Her book isn't. Her book is more comprehensive. And her book, The Interior Castle, it will show you the various stages of Christian maturity, from the most immature to the most mature, from the most shallow to the deepest, and what the obstacles are. And this is one of the classic obstacles. And I'll tie it in with what Jesus said, George, and I'll have to leave it at this. Remember the parable of the sower of the seed? Jesus talks about the sower of the seed. Remember that?
Yep.
Okay. So one of the kinds of ground that the seed fell on was shallow. And so what happened is the seed fell, but it didn't grow because it didn't have enough depth to grow. And so it basically withered. He talks about this in Luke chapter 8. I'll just read it to you because I think it really ties in with what you're saying. A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell along the path and was trodden underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it. And some fell on the rock, and as it grew up, it withered away because there was no moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew with it and choked it. And some fell into good soil and grew and yielded 100-fold. So what you don't want is you don't want to be like the seed that fell upon the rock, or in the other version in Matthew's gospel, the shallow soil, because there's not enough there for this seed to really mature and sink down roots and grow, whether because of lack of moisture or lack of depth. Don't be that kind of seed. The way to avoid it is to push past this by God's grace and your own fidelity, and you will come out of it. And you may go back into it again and come back out of it again and go back in and come out. St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, she revealed, or her writings anyway, revealed that for like the last 40 years of her life, she was making a daily holy hour. She was a woman of prayer, daily mass, daily rosary. She was faithful. But by her own admission in her diary, she said she felt zero connection with God that whole time. She felt no presence of God. She felt no consolation. And she was as dry can be when it came to her spiritual life. But she persisted. Where have I heard that before? And in this case, she was right to do so. And there's another example of how sometimes God does permit these long periods of dryness. And hopefully it won't be that way in your case. But when you read this book, The Interior Castle, you will find a great deal there that's going to speak to you. But I have to take a break. So I hope that's helpful, George. Check it out. I'll be right back right after this. Catholic Order of Forrester. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Cyrus is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back.
Happy September 1st.
Oh, now that you mention it, that's right. Happy September 1st. My 10th anniversary.
Happy Not of marriage, anniversary.
Though. Not of marriage, though.
Yep.
Of being with the company. Hey, Jerry sent me an email and said, Patrick, I don't use Twitter. Where can I find the baseball article you mentioned a few minutes ago? Easy peasy, Jerry. All you have to do is go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and we have the Twitter feed embedded there. So even if you're not on Twitter, even if you're not on Twitter, you can still go to twitter.com/PMadridShow and still get it there. You don't have to be signed up for Twitter to get it. But if you want, oh, that's a cool picture of me. Look at that. That's A Fistful of Tacos, that movie that I starred in back in.
You're just seeing that?
Yeah, I'm just now seeing it.
Oh, that's good.
That's funny. A Fistful of Tacos. Yeah, I remember doing that movie. So you'll find it there, Jerry. Easy peasy, as I say. Thank you for writing to me. Let's see. Back to the phones. We're going to go now to Chia in St. Paul. Good morning, Chia.
Good morning, Patrick. This is my question. Based on what we know about the church's teaching of marriage and family, should Catholic men have man caves? In other words, do you think that man caves are good for Catholic men?
So by man cave, I presume you mean the place that's got the big screen TV and the easy chair and a place where he can go smoke cigars and drink beer with his buddies and watch, you know, baseball games or something like that?
Oh, yeah. It's nowadays the term just refers to like a personal space for a man in the household where, you know, kids, wife, are off limits because it's his personal space, and it's the place where he goes to just by himself to just enjoy whatever he wants to do. It's like a sanctuary, kind of secular sanctuary for him, you could say.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's ideally a good idea to say, here's a part of the house that's for me to do whatever I want and nobody can come in here. I mean, there are parts of the house, like your bedroom, for example. You know, if you're a married woman, you and your husband have a certain enclave there. And I don't mean just because of conjugal activity. I just mean your bedroom is sort of a safe haven. The two of you can go. And very often in many families, the kids, although they could come in, they typically don't. They sort of leave their parents' room as a place where they don't go. I think that's pretty common. There are married women who might have a sewing room. And they may have a special part of the house that's dedicated to their sewing room or to their, I mean, I don't know how many women sew anymore, but back in the day. Or if you're an artist and you have a place where you like to do your painting and the other members of the family don't come in there. I don't see anything inherently wrong with that. For much of my married life, although not all of it, but for much of my married life, I have had an office in our home. And in my office, the kids knew that when dad is in there and the door is closed, you don't go in there and bother him because he's writing or something like that. So within general limits, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But the way you're describing it, it suggests to me that there is this kind of unnecessary exclusion by saying to your wife or to your kids, you can't come in here. I don't think that's right. That's not appropriate. Especially if you're trying to foster a good family life. And also, for that matter, if he's going in there to do things that, number one, are taking him away from the time he should be with his family. Everybody needs relaxation time. Everybody needs to get away. Everybody needs some time alone. Everybody needs a place where they can just be by themselves and read a book for a while or whatever. That's fine. But if it's like, hey, this is my sacrosanct place, you're not allowed to come in, and this is where I'm going to play video games for 8 hours, or this is where I'm going to get drunk and watch a football game, that's, to my mind, very unhealthy. And it's a detriment to the family. It is robbing his wife and his children of the time that he rightfully should be giving to them. So finding a balance somewhere in the middle seems like the right way to go about it. I don't know that it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary for there to be no place that the husband or the wife can escape to if they need a little bit of quiet time. I think, you know, for our mental hygiene, we all need that kind of thing. But if it goes beyond that and becomes something like what, you know, what sounds like you're alluding to, then I would see some real red flags with that.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. What is my thoughts? How does that sound to you? I mean, do you find them consistent with your own thoughts? Or?
Yes, I completely agreed. My husband and I are married in the church, and we've been debating about this because there are some, you know, therapists who said that, yeah, like man caves are needed for men just because of like how men are, how men's brains and women's brains like may differ. And you know, there's like books that my husband's been given about like rubber band theory. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I'm just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. There is something that seems to go against, you know, the Catholic theology in my mind that, you know, the husband and the wife's role, right, is one, for each other, and then secondly, for, you know, the well-being of their children. And if you have a space that you say, it's my space, and that, you know, then the fact that you say it's my, and that, like, you're, it's like an exclusion of your wife and your children.
Right. I think that's where it goes overboard. I do. Let's think about St. Joseph for a minute, the foster father of Jesus. I'm sure he did not have a man cave. And chances are they actually lived in a cave in Nazareth, because that's how most of the houses were. That at that time, the people tended to have their homes in caves. So I'm not making a joke there or anything. But I wouldn't be surprised, Chia, if when we get to heaven and we find out what life was like for the Holy Family, I wouldn't be at all surprised if St. Joseph's workshop, his carpenter shop, was a kind of place where he could be alone and working and thinking and praying. There is a way in which that kind of thing can be really good. And it wouldn't surprise me if St. Joseph had that type of solitude in his carpenter shop. But I'm positive that St. Joseph didn't have a room in their humble home that said, okay, this is mine. You guys can't come in here. So this is where I say that there can be an aberrant form of this. And anyway, so food for thought. I appreciate it. Let's go to Susan now in Virginia. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I'm calling because I have a niece who is in her early 20s and is severely mentally ill. She sees very violent visions and hears voices telling her to hurt herself and hurt other people. I am at a loss as to how to help her or do anything for her. I have wanted to talk to them about possibly seeing a priest, but I know that they would not be open to that.
Okay.
And she's also, I'm also concerned because she has tried to commit suicide several times, and I am hoping that God would be merciful on her should she ever succeed.
Yeah, let's pray that she doesn't succeed. Obviously, I know you do. If this is mental in nature, if this is organic in her mind or in her body or a combination, then the best way to help somebody like that is through therapy, some medical intervention. Is she getting any therapy, any psychiatric?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's important.
She has been in and out of mental hospitals for many years, and she's on a great deal of medication.
Okay, and even still, these problems persist?
Yes.
Okay. Well, whenever the best thing to do is whenever somebody is expressing ideas about committing suicide would be either to get in touch with the suicide hotline. I believe it now it's just 988, if I'm not mistaken, on your phone. Or even better, if you can have the person herself talk to somebody on this hotline, they're trained to be able to help somebody who's going through an episode like that. But now, as far as the spiritual dimension of it goes, it's possible that there is some diabolical influence. And from what I understand from reading and listening to those priests who are exorcists, this is not uncommon. I don't know if it's common, but it's not uncommon. And so I would work with her. You say these are her parents who seem resistant to this. Maybe they will come around. Maybe you could say, well, look, this is something you haven't tried yet. What if we pursue this as a possibility of finding some relief for your daughter? And maybe they'll be receptive to that. Have you ever actually broached that topic with them in a gentle way?
I did, and they kind of mocked me.
Are they not Catholic?
My brother is a fallen away Catholic and his wife is not Catholic.
Okay. Perhaps you could give them a book that could help make straight the path to do this, a book by Father Gabriel Amorth called An Exorcist Tells His Story. He's dead now, but he was an exorcist in Rome for, I don't know, a million years. And he has some really helpful insights. And he's not pushing anything. He's just explaining, this is what I saw as an exorcist for all these years, and this is the kind of thing that people experience. And perhaps if you shared his story with them, that might help them take this more seriously. Now, I'm not saying that this is definitely a diabolical situation, because who knows? I have no way of knowing. But in the event that there is some diabolical activity, the sooner that she can get some assistance from an exorcist, the better. So perhaps you could try that.
Is there anything I can do for her aside from just praying for her? I don't really have that much access to her, but it's very frustrating to watch and know that she's suffering in this way.
Try this. You could get a miraculous medal and have it blessed and put it on a nice chain, something feminine and beautiful, and give her that as a gift and encourage her to wear it. And one of the things that you'll notice is does she express any kind of like immediate aversion to this? People who have diabolical, not necessarily possession, but certainly if there's actual true possession, which I don't think happens very often, but even if it's something less than that, but there's some diabolical influence there, people in that situation generally react very vehemently against something that has been blessed, like a miraculous medal or a scapular or a rosary, things like that. So you could, in a sense, almost have a little test here to find out, how does she react to this? If she says, oh, thank you, and she puts it on and you don't notice any change in her demeanor, that'd be a really good sign. But if she flares up and her eyes, you know, get wide and she has a vehement reaction, that would be one of the signs that maybe there really is some diabolical activity there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, what can you do to help her? I mean, obviously, pray for her. That's the most important thing you can do. Try to work behind the scenes with her parents if you can. Intercede with them to see if you can steer them in the direction of help, seeing if a priest can help them. Show good example to her. Love her. Be there for her. I realize that there's some danger involved here because of her terrible thoughts and things of that nature. So be careful, obviously. Don't put yourself in any kind of grave risk. But to the extent that you can help her with these things, that's what I would do. And check into that issue with maybe giving her a gift of a rosary or a crucifix or a miraculous medal. We'll say a little prayer for her. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Sonia in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, Bobby. Can you hear me?
Kind of.
Can you hear me?
Kind of. The phone was making a lot of noise, but sounds better now.
Okay, let me. Okay, hold on a second. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment about the lady who called about her son not wanting to do the confirmation and asking about this acute girl there. I've been a catechist for, I would say, about eight years teaching confirmation class. My program is a two-year program, and usually at the first time I have the students in front of me, I have a little assessment, anonymous, and I say, you know, why you are here. Usually about 50% of them, they say, I'm obligated. You know, they are there because their parents are forcing them to be there. And that's okay. You know, that's perfect. I tell them, like, oh, that's okay if you want to be here, if you're obligated. But, you know, hopefully, you know, through this, you know, confirmation program, you will learn a little bit more. So my advice to the mom is that she should try to work with the catechist, meaning, you know, when he gets out of the confirmation class, oh, what did you talk about in confirmation class today? And hopefully he will tell, oh, we talk about this. And she can, you know, go, oh, well, tell me, what did she tell you? What did he say about that? And then she can help him. I think most of the parents send their kids to confirmation class, and they just wash their hands. And it's really hard for a catechist to do all the, you know, heavy lifting alone, and which we're just helping the parents, actually. Mm-hmm. Going to Mass, even though if he or she doesn't want to go, going to Mass on Sunday, make it a priority. Going to Mass, if he has a game, go Saturday evening or whatever. But I think the best thing is to be involved.
Very good advice, Sonia. I appreciate it. I'm out of time, though. Thank you. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity Healthshare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right, Patrick Madrid here with you. Thank you for listening, 888-914-9149. Have an email that comes in from Patricia. Thank you for listening to the program. I think you're listening on the Relevant Radio app, Patricia, so thank you for that. Now, she is referring to an answer I gave to another lady who wrote in about a marriage issue. And if you were listening earlier in the show today, you heard me talk about it. And she was asking if a certain activity within marriage and within the marriage act, if that certain activity is permissible. And I quoted from a venerable manual of Catholic moral theology, Primer, and shared with her that yes, and I gave some parameters, and this is what the church says, and under these circumstances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, this can be permissible. Okay. So this is a follow-up to that email and to the answer that I gave. And she says, and I'm going to kind of rephrase the way she put it because I know there are children listening. So she says, in reference to that, in that particular act, if a married couple is well past childbearing age and unable to complete the marital act due to impotence, is that act that I talked about earlier as one of the things that could be preparatory to the perfection of the marriage act, is that morally okay, or would that be sinful? And again, in the case of a couple who cannot engage in the marriage act because of impotence. It's a very good question. And the answer to that is, yes, it would be sinful. And I'm going to speak in generalities here. Fair warning, parents. I'm not going to talk in any way very specific, but if this is something your children don't need to listen to, and it's not really age appropriate for them in any case, then turn the radio down. Fair warning, ready, steady, go. The thing to remember, and this is what we would approach the whole question of the marital act with, is number one, is there anything about it that is either intrinsically sinful in itself? And I talked about the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and that word, the name of the town, Sodom, found its way into our vocabulary as a result of the activity that was going on in that town, if you follow what I'm trying to say here. That would be an example of something that you cannot do in marriage. That is immoral. So that's the first category. Those things aside, and the other things that are not immoral and are permissible as long as they help to perfect the act itself, which means that the act is completed in the natural, normal fashion. That is crucial. So what that means is that signs of affection, kissing, hugging, etc., all those things are proper to married couples. They're lawfully able to enjoy those benefits of marriage, absolutely, with no restriction whatsoever. However, the way in which that act concludes, and in particular, most especially with regard to the husband, can only take place within that act itself. So if that act is not taking place, then the way in which the act concludes for the husband cannot take place. I mean, morally speaking, should not take place, because that particular thing is reserved for that particular act. So apart from that act, no. As part of the act, absolutely. And so in the case of marital intimacy, and I'll just leave it at this, things that involve expressing affection that would be otherwise present in this act are permissible to marry people, but you can't cross the line and go into how the act concludes. And if it's not done in the marriage act, that's not something that married people can do. I hope that's sufficiently clear and sufficiently unclear, depending on who's listening. Thanks for the email. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in Mount Morris, Wisconsin. Hi, John.
Hi, Patrick. I heard you talk one day, maybe a month ago or so, and somebody about drug rehabilitation that was done by maybe a group of monks or something like that in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's not monks. It's a religious sister. Her name is Sister Elvira. We would say Elvira in the United States, but it's Elvira, an Italian nun who established what's called the Cenacle community. The Cenacle is the word for the upper room where Jesus celebrated the Last Supper. So the Cenacle community, or the Comunità Cenacolo in Italian, and their website is hopereborn.org.
Hopereborn.org.
Yeah. And they are in Florida. They have, I think, 70 centers around the world. There are two in the United States, and the one I'm most familiar with, although I've never visited, is in Florida. But you should check them out if you have somebody in your life that you'd like to get help for.
I do. All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, John. And hey, as long as John brought this issue up, I'll just mention the thing I find most striking and really wonderful about this organization is that they don't charge people to go there. So if you have a son or daughter hooked on drugs and you've tried everything and nothing works, get in touch with them. And there are plenty of places who will be happy to charge you $10,000 or $15,000 a month because you're desperate and because they know that in your desperation, you'll pay whatever the price might be to help your son or daughter escape from the clutches of drug or alcohol addiction. They'll be happy to take your $10,000 a month. This place doesn't charge anything. And they, well, just go to their website and look at it for yourself, hopereborn.org. Let's go to Timothy now in Joyce, Washington. Hi, Timothy.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you. You have been such an inspiration to me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
I've followed you for a very, very long time. Here's my comment. Arise from Darkness from Father Benedict Groeschel was very, very powerful in my walk. And with that, I heard that this morning in you talking to people, but thank you.
That's good to hear.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Book.
Yeah.
And I hope one day you guys will come to West Coast, but thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Timothy. And Cyrus and everybody there. And it's just amazing, but thank you so much.
Thank you, Timothy. Kind of you to take time from your busy day to share that with me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to leave that comment, and you have a lot of listeners out here on the West Coast.
Oh, shout out to all of my friends out on the West Coast, starting with you, Timothy. Kind of you. Thank you very much. Let's get those Relevant Radio bumper stickers circulating widely, especially in the Pacific Northwest. Boy, do we need Relevant Radio there. Thank you. How about, where are we going? Let's go to Raquel in Gilbert, Arizona. Hi, Raquel.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning, Cyrus.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Cyrus.
that's not me. Hello.
I have a question about my daughter. She is turning 18 this weekend. I have two questions, actually. The first one is, I have not allowed her to be vaccinated with the COVID vaccine.
Okay.
And it's been an area of tension. All her friends are very liberal and they've all been vaccinated. The conservative Catholics, she's just having a hard time. She's not practicing anymore. So anyway, she wants to get vaccinated on the morning of her 18th birthday before her party, before anything else. She wants to go get vaccinated.
Wow.
So I could really use your input. Probably because she's saying to me, like, okay, I'm 18, I can do whatever I want now. Like, and it's also the pull of her friends. She can be like, guess what, guys? I'm like, you know, I got vaccinated.
I'm one of you now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, she's turning 18. So, I mean, I don't buy into the theory that, well, she's 18 now. My job is done. I'll wash my hands and whatever she does, that's on her. I don't view parenting that way. And it sounds like you don't either. But technically, if she's turning 18, she has that legal right to go do that. And if that's her way of showing that she's no longer under your thumb, you're not the boss of her anymore kind of thing. If that's what's motivating her and whatever other considerations you might have brought to the table haven't affected anything, I'm not really sure what you can do, you know.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. What do you think if I say she spends way too much time on her phone and she comes out with all these crazy things? She came out last night and she's like, she's telling me like childbirth, like risk the mother's health, and so many people die during childbirth and they have all these complications. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So we talked about that for a while, which was good. But what if I say I think that the influence of your phone is consuming too much of your time? And if you want to get the vaccine, that's fine. You get something you want. I, on the other hand, am paying your phone bill. Therefore, I get something I want, and I want you off your phone by 8 o'clock every night. And I'll take your phone and put it up until the next morning. Granted, she's 18, and this is going to be a hard, I don't know if I'm going to be strong enough to enforce it because she
Where is your husband in the middle of all strong-willed. This?
He bought her the phone, and I kept saying, we need to put restrictions on it. Nope, 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 nope. He just thinks that she should be able to moderate herself. And I'm like, but clearly she can't. Like, she never could.
Yeah. Well, when did she get the smartphone? This is just a background detail. I'm just curious. Did she get it when she was 17, or did she get it when she was 13, or when did she get it?
I don't even remember. Maybe 15?
Okay.
Maybe 15.
Okay. Well, you're expressing frustration that I can easily relate to, and I can empathize with you. This is one of the reasons why giving children, and I know you didn't do it, but it happened, but as a general principle, don't give your kids, and I'm not speaking to you, Raquel, at the moment, I'm just speaking in general, don't give your kids smartphones, because this is what will happen. They will get addicted to them. It's inevitable. They will get addicted to the smartphone. And then a lot of the sewage of ideology that flows through the cell phone from TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat and all the other ways in which they get a hold of information. And this, by the way, that you're describing, Raquel, is just propaganda from Big Abortion. You can counteract that with the facts from organizations like Live Action, Lila Rose's organization that gives facts and science in response to a lot of the propaganda that's put out and the pseudoscience that's put out by the so-called big abortion advocates. So I would maybe fight fire with fire and text her links to some of these things. But I honestly don't think if she's 18 and you're saying, well, you've got to turn in your phone at 8 p.m. or whatever, I'm going to put it up on a high shelf, that's kind of infantilizing her. That's not really an appropriate way to treat a young woman who's turning 18 and who's mistaken on many things. But to treat her like if she was 13, I don't think that's going to help the situation. If anything, it's going to cause a great deal more resentment. But I do think that you should do what you alluded to, and that is to say, well, if you're 18 now, then you're paying your cell phone bill. She should have been paying it in any case before, even if she was on the family plan. She should have been paying her portion of it to whatever extent there would be. But car insurance, cell phone, things of that nature, those are all things that by the time you turn 18, you should be paying for on your own anyway. So I would definitely support, if you were my wife and you said, hey, I think we should stop paying her phone bill because she's 18 and she's insisting on things that we don't agree with, I would support that for sure.
All right.
Right. I know it's a difficult situation, and you're probably worried for your daughter. Yeah. But this is another example of why you don't give smartphones to your kids. Not you, Raquel, but just I hope people listening to you realize that this has real effects in the lives of your kids, and it doesn't get better over time. It tends to get worse over time. Mm-hmm. So
I agree.
But I wouldn't infantilize her by doing that. I don't think it's appropriate at that age.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And do you have any recommendations for a book I can give her for her 18th birthday about Catholicism that would maybe somehow have an effect on her or make her think? Because I still talk to her, and she acts like she doesn't hear what I'm saying, but I'm still talking. I'm like, something's got to get in there.
Does she like to read?
She does. She's just busy with school. I don't know how much time, maybe over break or something, I can.
There's a classic book that I think is, I read it and I enjoyed it, but I think it speaks to women especially, and it's called Hind's Feet on High Places. Hind's Feet, you know, hind like a deer. Hind's Feet on High Places. And the author, the woman's name is Hannah Hunard, H-U-N-N-A-R-D. And it's a classic, and it's an allegorical tale. So you've got this, the protagonist of this novel is a woman, and her name is Much Afraid. And she is being called to do something that involves risk and some suffering, but the payoff is really, really important, really, really good. And so your daughter will see herself in this character. I bet if you read it, you'd love it too. So Hind's Feet on High Places by Hannah Hunard, H-U-N-N-A-R-D. I'll be right back.